This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this July 4th, we're going to play back one of our favorite recent interviews, which also got a big response from listeners. It's the interview I recorded in May with Lizzo.
That's exactly how I feel. That's exactly how I feel. That's exactly how I feel.
That's my guest, rapper and singer Lizzo, from her new album, 'Cause I Love You. It was described in Rolling Stone by Rob Sheffield as Lizzo's legend-making breakthrough album, where she finally claims her crown as a mega-pop queen. Lizzo is a self-described big girl. Her backup dancers are big girls, too. Her songs are body positive. When she was in college, she was studying to become a classical flautist. Although rap and pop won out, she's found a place for her flute in her music. Prince was a fan, and she recorded a track for his album Plectrum Electrum with Third Eyed Girl. Let's start with a track from Lizzo's new album. This is Juice. Lizzo, welcome to Fresh Air. I love your new album. Thank you so much for coming. The album shows off your rapping and your singing, and it's so well produced. What was your vision for the album? What did you want to say lyrically and musically?
Well, I've been working on music for the last, 3 years, and I made, three different albums, I was telling different stories. It was different sonically. One was more pop, one was more trap, and then we made 'Cause I Love You. And I think what's different about this music is that I'm just a little bit more vulnerable than I am ever before. Even my vocal is a little bit more vulnerable. So I wanted to tell, and I wanted to show vulnerability and strength on this album. And even to the album cover, being completely naked, but also looking so comfortable with myself, I think is a testament to this album showing vulnerability and strength.
And for anybody who hasn't seen the album cover, you are literally naked on it.
I am.
But you're covering your privates with other parts of your
barely.
Body.
Barely. I was actually, we had done a lot of poses that day, and that was me, because I was tooting my butt up. And then I got my back was hurting a little bit. So I just kind of relaxed and leaned forward. And then the photographer, he was like, look at me. And I looked at him, and that was the shot. So that was me just so comfortable, not trying to cover anything up. But, that's just how the magic happens.
Whose idea was it to pose nude on the cover? Was it yours or another person's suggestion?
Well, my creative team is amazing, and we all have one brain. But we had done a shoot before for the album cover, and I think that we had overstyled it and overdressed it. So I think when we had to do a reshoot, we chose to go the opposite route and start with nothing and build back up. But the nothing shots were the greatest. So I think it just happened naturally.
Sometimes when I see somebody who's nude or who's half nude, largely nude on their album cover or in a photo, and it's a woman, and I think it sometimes bothers me, because I think are you making yourself into a sex object for men? When you're doing it on your album cover, I think it's a really bold statement, and it's a statement for women. And do you know what I mean? Because you are trying to break the mold of what beautiful is. And
yeah,
so you're
but are you only saying that because I'm fat? You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like if I were a thin woman, maybe that wouldn't be the case. I feel like women who are smaller aren't really given the opportunity to be body positive or role models either, because we've been conditioned to believe that women are using their bodies for the male gaze. And I think if I were slimmer, I don't think people would look to me with the same type of like, oh wow, she's so brave, she's doing this and representing everyone, that they would, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm big.
I know what you're saying, and I think it's just a really complicated issue for me, because sometimes I feel, you know, like I'm older than you are, and a lot of women in my generation fought against women having to display their bodies to sell cars, or, you know, because like, mm-hmm. like scantily dressed women were always used to like sell things, you know,
yeah.
So like the woman was like the come on for you to buy the car or buy the product or mm-hmm. to sell the album or whatever. And it was just like selling women as like as sexuality, period. Like that's what you were, your sexuality, period.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think things are getting really redefined. And I think, you know, you're doing it as part of like the redefinition and part mm-hmm. of making, I mean, I think the statement you're making is very positive and more feminist, as opposed yeah. to like somebody is using my body to sell something to someone.
Yeah, but I'm just as feminist as Megan Thee Stallion, you know what I'm saying, in her album covers. I think what's happening here is that there's different waves of feminism,
mm-hmm.
and it's definitely, it's just like, it's like a generational thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, one generation asks one thing, and then that next generation is going to ask the complete opposite of it because of the lack thereof. You know what I'm saying? So where there was a wave of feminism where we were burning bras, now I'm like, my bra is in your face. You know what I'm saying? And I think that that is just a testament to human beings and how we evolved. And I think that the wave of feminism right now that's overtly sexual and in your face, I think is just the response to where we were like, I'm going to wear a suit and I'm going to boss up on you. And you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't tell me what to do type vibes. And I was like, no, I'm going to tell you what to do. Hello.
So did you always feel body positive about yourself? Did you always feel confident? Or were there periods of your life where all of the fat shaming that happens in our culture made you uncomfortable about yourself?
Well, 10 years ago, I couldn't find a bathing suit and I couldn't find bikinis for my body size. And I was being told every day that my face is great, but my body needs work. And I was being shamed in little ways that people didn't even realize they were shaming me. It was so ingrained. And I started to shame myself and actually believed what they were saying to me. And I think about 10 years ago, I made the decision that I just wanted to be happy with my body. And I just wanted to be happy with who I am, and that I would wake up every day in the same body and it wasn't going to change. And that was the beginning of my journey with learning how to love my body. And it most certainly didn't end there, and it didn't apex there. Like, I had to work for many, many years to get to this point. Like, I think I was 21 when it started, and I don't even think I fully realized or actualized and believed what I was saying until maybe 7 years later. And I'm still working on it every day. There's days where I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, you know, this isn't me. But then I have to remind myself, this is you. It looks a little different, but it's still you. And you have to find that love for yourself deep down inside, underneath all of that, you know, questioning and ickiness.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're doing is helping a lot of people love themselves. So that's great. I want to talk a little bit about the production on your album. It's so good. And there's different producers on different tracks. You're a constant on there. But, you know, even though there's different producers for different tracks, the album has a kind of very coherent sensibility to it. Can you talk a little bit about the production and what your role is when deciding what the sound is going to be on each track?
Well, as some people may know, I am, you know, classically trained in music theory and music performance. So I have kind of an innate ear, and actually a highly skilled ear when it comes to frequency and harmony and dissonance and melody. And so it, for me, it's this thing that I can feel in my body. I'm almost like a tuning fork, where if I hear the beat and I vibrate at the level that, you know, I'm supposed to, I know that that's what I want to get on. And from being trained. I think it's easier for me to speak a language to producers, and I can speak engineer to the engineers. And I think we all just have so much fun nerding out. Like, I don't actually like being given a beat. Like, I love to be there at the conception of a song, from just watching the producer put that click track on and just build from there. Like, that's my favorite part, is watching the birth of a song and being a part of the birth. And so most of the songs on this album actually were just, you know, little click tracks. And then I sat in the room and just watched them grow into the beautiful songs that they are. And I think that's why I'm so integral to the sound of the music and the sonics. And I'm credited as a producer on a couple of the songs because I was there, you know, and and my DNA is in there as well.
So I want to play another song from your new album, 'Cause I Love You, and this is the title track. And I want to play this because it really shows off like you're singing, and you really sing terrifically. And also, you were talking about bringing a vulnerability now to some of your music, and I think this is an example of that too. So before we hear it, do you want to say anything about, you know, co-writing this or putting it together, the sound you wanted? It sounds like a power ballad to me.
'Cause I Love You is one of my favorite songs I've ever been a part of. I feel like it's one of the greatest songs ever written. You know, if I didn't write it, I would say the same thing, only because I've never quite heard anything like it, besides maybe like CeeLo. But I remember we were at lunch, and I was telling the producer, who was ex-ambassadors and Sam Harris, that I was telling this guy, like, I'm not crying because I'm sad. I'm crying because I love you. And he literally looked and said, that's a song. I'm crying because I love you. Bomb, 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 bomb. And we were in the middle of a whole different song, and I said, we need to do that. And I sat down and wrote these lyrics in 10 minutes, and they made that music like that. And I feel like, you know, it's songs like that that just make you question, like, how is this even done? Where does music even come from? I'm so proud of this song, and I hope you like it too.
I love it. So let's hear it. This is 'Cause I Love You from Lizzo's new album of the same name.
What the feelings, yo? Once upon a time I was a hoe. I don't even want a hoe no more. Got you something from the liquor store. Little bit of Lizzo and some mo. Trying to open up a little mo. Sorry if my heart a little slow.
So you grew up in Detroit. What music did you grow up with?
In Detroit, I grew up with a lot of gospel music. I remember we would listen to Perfecting Praises over and over and over. That was the Marvin Winans family album. And they would always come out with family albums, and we would just listen to that. Like, it was strictly gospel. I didn't really listen to secular music or, like, radio music. But mind you, I was still very, very young. But it shaped who I am today on stage. Like, you get a lot of hallelujah moments from me, and that's from Detroit and growing up in the Kojic Church.
Which church?
The Church of God in Christ, which is Kojic.
So when you weren't listening to secular music, was that because of the church? Did your parents not want secular music in the house?
I mean, well, you know, it was the devil. So we didn't. My parents, so the funny thing is, you know, my sister and my brother, who are older than me, they remember different things. Like, my dad, he really loved Elton John, and my mom loved Stevie Wonder. So, you know, we would have those types of things, Hall & Oates, you know, Queen. My dad loved Queen. So, like, those things would filter in here and there. But for the most part, you know, we try to listen to gospel music. Music makes people feel things, and it made me feel things in church that I knew that I could bring to my music. You know what I'm trying to say? So, mm-hmm. like, for instance, there was something about the way that the what's it called? It's like a revival song or shout music. Shout music is when the drummers are going off and the bass is like doom 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 doom. You know, and then at that point everybody's just running around the church and everyone's shouting. Like that reaction, that visceral physical reaction that you see in people that's driven by the music, like the pastor talking can make you say amen all day, but there's something about that driving music that makes you want to get out of your seat and run. And I knew that music had the power to move people physically, even emotionally, but especially physically. So I don't think it's just because we're talking about Jesus, because even in those bass lines, the bass line's not talking about Jesus. The bass line is just running and it takes you to God, or you know what I'm saying? It's just a vessel. And so I want to use my music as a vessel to get you where you need to go, to a positive place.
Okay, so I'm going to play a song that I think really gets you moving. The lyrics are very not spiritual, literally. They're more profane. and I want to play Boys.
Girl, what? This transition. All right, let's go.
It gets you moving. It gets you moving. And in terms of believing in your music, I think this succeeds.
Yeah, I will say that this song live, out of all the other songs, get the people stomping. So if you ready to stomp,
okay,
there's Boys.
And I know it's quite a segue from what we're talking about, but I see it as connected. So talk a little bit about writing this.
Boys is the song that almost never happened. I remember Boys, I wrote like back during the coconut oil days. And
so it would be around 2016?
2015, 2016. And I remember back then I wasn't really as much as a player as I am now, and I wasn't getting as much, I wasn't actually living those words I was saying, you know. I was hopeful and I wanted to be there, but I wasn't quite there. And I remember we kind of just put that song in the back burner. It had a completely different beat and all of that. And then when like fast forward a few years later, I'm sitting in a meeting with my managers, and I was like, we were like looking for a song. Like I was playing them all these songs that I've been working on, and they were like, these are okay. And then I went deep into my email, and I was like, let me play them this one and just see what they think. And I played them Boys, and they just started laughing and giggling and moving. And I was like, uh-oh, y'all like this one, huh? So we went in the studio and we finished her, and this song I'm so proud of, and that just goes to show you that, like, you know, it doesn't matter when you made something, like, that song can come back and change your life.
Mm-hmm. So this is Boys, and it was released first as a single, but it's an extra on the, like, expanded version of your new
deluxe
album, 'Cause I Love You. The
mm-hmm.
deluxe version. Okay, so here's Lizzo.
What you say, boy? You tryna play coy like a game boy? Hit my phone, boy. Is your homeboy? Are you a lone boy? Come give me dome, boy. Got a boy with degrees, a boy in the streets, a boy on his knees, he a man in the sheets. Sheesh, it's all Greek to me. Got this boy speaking Spanish. I hit puppy. Baby, I don't need you. I just wanna freak you. I heard you a freak too. What's 2 + 2? Mississippi boys, inner city boys. I like the pretty boys with the bow tie. Get your nails did, let it blow dry. I like a big beard, I like a clean face. I don't discriminate, come and get a taste. From the playboys to the gay boys. Go and slay boys, you my fave boys.
Baby, I don't need you.
No, I don't need
you. I just wanna freak you.
I want it, yeah.
I heard you a freak too.
So that was Boys, which is on the expanded deluxe version of Lizzo's new album, 'Cause I Love You, and it also was released last year as a single. I hear so much Prince in the production on that. So I know you met Prince when you were living in Minneapolis.
And I was on his album. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you did a track on the on one of his
Plectrum Electrum.
On Plectrum Electrum with Third Eyed Girl. And so how did he find you? Because he invited you to perform for him. He asked you then to do a track for Plectrum Electrum. So I know you when you moved to Minneapolis after college, after dropping out of college, you became a kind of important part of the music scene there. But so how did he find you? How did he hear you?
Okay, so there was a documentary being made about burgeoning musicians, and also, like, you know, yeah, I think it was just burgeoning musicians actually in Minnesota, and it was on one of the like local news stations, and it was us, me and my best friend and my DJ Sophia Aris's group, The Feeling, who won The Voice, and Plectrum Electrum, who is Prince's band, and I think some other people too, but I can't remember. And they did a piece on us, and the day it aired, the Current, the radio station in Minneapolis called, and or St. Paul in Minneapolis, they called and said, they hit us up and said, yo, you won't believe this, but Prince just sent us an email asking for y'all's contact. And we were like, what? And mind you, this was maybe 2 years after I moved to Minneapolis. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, well, give them our email. What are you waiting for? And the email just simply said, I would like for you to come to Paisley Park on Easter Sunday. And
Easter Sunday, wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. And to work on a song. And we went, and it was magical. And from then on, we had a relationship with Paisley Park and with him, where we would he would ask us to come perform for his parties, and we would come and perform. And we also had, he, you know, talked about me in interviews. He was like, you know, Lizzo's one to watch. She's up next. When nobody was checking for me, he was checking for, you know, young black girls and young black artists and giving us a voice, and gave me my first big check. I mean, I have a lot of respect and deep, profound relationship with one of the greatest artists of all time. So that's all I can say about that.
After you dropped out of college, figuring that you couldn't be both like the classical musician and the rap artist at the same time, your parents had moved to, I think it was Denver by that point.
Yeah.
And you were no longer living in the dorm because you weren't in college, and you were kind of without a home for a while. So you slept in your car and slept in the recording studio. What was that like for you to, like, not have a home?
Ah, man, when it was actually happening to me, I didn't think of myself as homeless. You kind of just are in like survival mode, and I have a deep understanding and a deep sensitivity to people who experience homelessness. I think that not having a home and being homeless, I think, are two different constructs. Like, I didn't have a home for 1.5 to 2 years of my life, that I made a choice to not go back to Denver and stay with my family. There are people who do not have a choice and their homelessness, and homelessness is something that plagues like so many hundreds of thousands and millions of people, specifically Americans, due to so many extenuating circumstances. So I want to make that distinction very clear. But I made this decision to not go back home to Denver, and I also did not have money. I did not have a job, and I allowed myself to just try to pursue music. And I think that I had a luxury and a privilege to be able to sleep on the floor of my drummer's house, to be able to sleep in a car my sister gave me, to be able to sleep at the studio where my rock band performed at, to be able to sneak into 24-hour fitness and use the showers there. I definitely was even privileged and abled to do that. It sucked. It was very lonely. It was very hard. And I think that I had risked it all for music.
Okay, so I want to break here and play another song. And this is from your 2016 EP, Coconut Oil. And the song is Good as Hell. I really love this. I know a lot of people do. Again, I'm going to ask you to talk about, you know, writing it and conceiving the sound.
Yeah. Good as Hell was the first time I had written a song that I was like, wow, this song could be on the radio. I never saw myself as like a big artist like that that would have song. I was very much indie minded, you know? And I remember it was one of the first songs I wrote with Ricky Reed. And we were in a studio, and he flew me out to LA, and I was like, oh, okay. I was like feeling myself. And we sat down, and he played this piano riff, and he said, how does this make you feel? And I was like, you know how it makes me feel? And I did a little hair flip, and I checked my nails. I was like, makes me feel like everything gonna be okay. You know, it's like, it makes me feel good as hell. And he was like, all right. And that was like the basis of our relationship. Like, he would literally take words from my mouth and be like, you know, you just wrote this lyric, right? And I was like, really? So this was the beginning of a very beautiful relationship.
Okay, let's hear it. This is Good as Hell from Lizzo's EP, Coconut Oil.
I do my hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Head toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
That was Lizzo doing Good as Hell from her 2016 EP, Coconut Oil. Her new album is called 'Cause I Love You. Do you remember any of the first rhymes that you wrote?
Yeah, I do. One of the first... Well, actually, I was writing pop songs before I was writing raps.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember when I was 9, I started a group called Peace, Love, and Joy with my two best friends, Pips and Mary. And I was Peace, and my other two friends were Love and Joy. And we would sing little Spice Girl songs that I would write. And I remember I wrote this one song for one of the groups that I was in called Initials, and it was called Broken Households. And I was like 13. And it was like, broken households, children lost hope, family struggling, battling sin. And I remember they were like, why would you write a song? Even in the bridge, I remember telling my friend Alexia, who's still one of my best friends. I told her, I wanted her to sing like, daddy, I need you more right now. Mommy, can't you see that? And they're like, why would you write a song? Like, did you have a broken household? I said, no. And they're like, why would you write a song like this? I'm like, I just wanted to like speak up on this issue.
I like the line, battling sin. Where did that come from? You were already not going to church when you were 13.
I mean, but we were still church folk. You know, when you come from a inside bar, when you come from a family church that your great grandmother and great grandfather founded like 1912, you know, it's kind of hard to find a church that can beat that. So
wait. Tell me more about your great grandmother and great grandfather founding this church.
Well, Mama and Daddy Kirkwood, they started the Mercy Faith Temple, and they put an anointing in there's something really sacred about Mama and Daddy Kirkwood that we talk about to this day. She lived to be 106, and she prayed over all of her grandchildren and prayed over all of her children, and everyone who comes from the Kirkwood lineage is blessed and favored and protected no matter where we go. So Mercy Faith Temple is right now, right here with me and you, you know, in this podcast. Mercy Faith Temple is on stage with me at the 9:30 Club tonight. So when you move down to Houston and you go to all these other churches and sometimes mega churches where the pastor's flying in on a helicopter, you lose some of that intimacy that you felt when everyone in the congregation is your cousin or your second cousin, or, you know, family friends so long that y'all think you cousins. You know what I mean? So I think that it was hard to replace that, but we always had it in our hearts.
So you play flute. And I'll just start by saying you've played flute like on TV and on videos. And a lot of people thought like, oh, it's dubbed by somebody else. She can't possibly play like that. She's not a classical person.
I don't know why people think that. That's racist.
Yes, you have some very funny videos answering that. But yeah. So tell us how you started to play flute. Like, this was what, fifth or sixth grade? Did you choose the instrument, yeah, or did a teacher say, you get to play flute and this other person gets to play trombone?
Yeah, they chose. The flute chose me. I remember I was in band in fifth grade, and we were sitting down, and there was one girl, her name was Miss Johnson, and she was a flute specialist, but I really think she was, like, just going to college and was trying to get some extra credits, and he was like, Mr. Browden was like, who do you want in your flute class? Who do you want to play flute? And she picked me, and I don't know why she picked me. I think later on she was like, you know, you just had a good embouchure. I could tell you'd have a good flute embouchure, which is, you know, your mouth, but I don't know. And I was like grateful because I wanted to play flute. I thought it was the coolest instrument, but you know, who could have known? All the cool girls play clarinet anyway.
why did you think that flute was the coolest instrument?
I don't know what I thought was so cool about it, but it was cool.
So you started in, like, I forget if you said fifth or sixth grade. But then later, like in junior high or high school, you started like forming rap groups with friends. Did there seem to be this like huge disconnect between your interest as a flute player and your interest in rap music? You don't hear a lot of flute in rap.
You do. You hear a lot of flute and rap, and people keep saying that to me, and I'm like, y'all, have y'all heard of Jay Dilla? Have y'all heard of Metro Boomin? Like, these producers use flute all the time. Like, one of the biggest hits was Mask Off, and it just had, the chorus was just a flute solo. I think we don't see rappers play flute. We hear it, and we don't subconsciously put two and two together. I think it would have been way more impactful to see Future actually playing the line on the flute to Mask Off, but he wasn't. I think that flute and hip-hop are very sexy. I think that flute and hip-hop have gone together for a long time. I think this is just the first time you actually see the artist actually playing the flute. And there wasn't a disconnect. You know, growing up in Houston and freestyle rapping was very first nature to me. Like, that was what I wanted to do. That's what you had to do as a rite of passage. Like, I was very nerdy. And the fact that I knew how to freestyle on the bus or freestyle in the cafeteria and bang on the desk just gave me a little get out of being a nerd free pass. And so I did it. Like, everybody did it. You know, Houston, I think, is like the king and the queen of freestyle. Like, that's the city that freestyle really found its swag. And I'm just lucky that I was a part of that while it was happening, and also a classically trained flute player. I think it's just weird to everybody else, but it's not weird to me.
Well, how long was it until you started bringing your flute to gigs?
Well, I will say that I was playing the flute in my rock band When I first started playing shows, I played the flute, and I got nominated for Best Alternative Instrument in the Houston Press Awards for flute, and I would pull that little girl out and just start playing, and they would freak out. But I think it made more sense to bring it out in a progressive rock band. I didn't start bringing the flute out in my rap career until, at least for my solo career, way later. And I think it was like something that I did. So, for instance, my first tape ever, Lizzo Bangers, all of the flute on that album, which there's a lot of flute samples, I replayed because we couldn't clear the flute. So I had to actually replay the flute on those songs. So I've been playing flute on my projects forever, but no one knew it was me until now.
So how serious were you about a career as a flutist? Flautist?
I was you know what's crazy? I always said flautist, and then one day someone's like, it's flutist. I'm like, shut up. But I was very, very, very serious. I studied flute. I played it every night. When I was a senior in high school or a junior, I started studying with the principal flutist of the Houston Opera. And she was also a professor at the University of Houston. So I was studying with Sydney Carlson for years. And she was kind of like priming me to go to U of H. She got me my scholarship to U of H. And then when I was studying with her there, she was setting me up to study at the Paris Conservatory.
Wow.
And I was going to study flute at the Paris Conservatory. And I was going to really just, you know, wait in line for that first chair. I saw a life of Concert Black and Boston Pops and traveling the world. And when that didn't pan out for me, I was very depressed. I was very sad. And I don't really know what happened. I think the pressure of those two worlds kind of got to me because I was waking up every morning at like 6 a.m. for marching band at U of H. And then I would go to the rehearsal hall, and I would practice in this tiny room for hours. And then at night, I would stay up and rap at fashion shows and try to stay up and keep up with all the fraternities and the sororities. And that was really taking a toll on me. And I was like, who are you? You know, at this point, you could do it all through high school, but you're in college now. You're about to be who you're going to be forever. And now who is that?
So did you choose rap over a classical career, or was the choice made for you?
I chose rap.
How come?
Because to me, it was the most instantly gratifying. I was in college for a music performance degree, but I was already performing, and I thought, you know, everyone thinks they know everything when they're 19, 20. I was like, I'm already performing. What do I need a music performance degree for? And I just stopped.
So, you know, I read that when you were in, I guess, middle school, that there was a period when you used to, like, put plastic wrap around your tummy and around your feet to make them smaller, kind of like girdling them. Can you compare your mindset about yourself physically then to what it is now?
Okay, so I will say this. I would put plastic wrap around my stomach and I would walk and I would try to work out every morning in middle school, and I would try to like lose all the fat off my stomach. But the shoe thing is real, because my feet were so wide, I would make my shoes slouch, and people would make fun of the fact that my shoes would slouch. Kids will make fun of anything, bro. Kids will find something about you. They would even make fun of the fact that your shirt had like nipples on it if it was on the hanger for too long. They'd be like, ah, you got on your shoulders. So kids were so mean that it's wild, right? I would go out of my way to, I would tape my feet up because I read about it. I read that women in like Asia would bind their feet. And, you know, I'm in middle school reading about this, and I was like, I'm going to bind my feet so that my shoes don't slouch over, especially my new ones. And because I cared so much about what people thought, because there was such a crazy consequence associated with being a little different. And I think that consequence now is completely, it's the opposite. You know, now being different makes you stand out. Now being different makes you a star. And I think that I had to embrace those differences to become the person that I am, or, you know what I'm saying, the star that I am, or else I would have just been homogenized like everybody else. I think when you're in middle school and in high school, you want to be like everybody else. You want to amalgamize and you want to be normal so badly, but I just couldn't help being weird. I was so weird that people went out of their way to point it out for me. And now I'm so grateful for that.
I just want to ask you about one more song, and it's called My Skin. And I want you to talk about the song.
My Skin is a song that I wrote, and it was, I would like to say that this was the beginning of my body positive songwriting journey. I wrote it because someone asked a question. Someone asked a question. Hold on, Jesus. They asked me, what's my favorite thing about myself? And I told them my personality, and they said, okay, but physically, what's your favorite thing about yourself? And I did not have an answer. And for the first time in my life, I had to actually think about something that I liked about myself physically. And because it was so difficult, I was moved to tears. And in that moment, I remembered that, you know, I had just, well, I'd just fallen off a cliff.
Literally?
I was rope swinging into the river. And I am just so heavy. And the rope, I fell off the rope and fell on the ground. It was really scary and traumatizing. I'll never do anything like that again. But I scraped up my skin. And I remember my friend was like, look what you did to your beautiful skin. And I still had the cane and I had the bandages on my legs during this interview, and I looked down and I was like, oh my God, my skin, that is my favorite thing about myself. And it was in that moment where I realized I had damaged my skin, where I saw the value in it. And that was the first time I'd ever discovered my body love. And I just started with my skin and moved on from there. And I wrote this song to celebrate that moment because it literally changed my life.
And it was about skin and about brown skin.
Oh, yeah. Because you know what's crazy? The thing that I like about myself the most is the thing that's weaponized against us. People with black skin, you know, we get that weaponized. And this was amid all of the, well, it's still happening to this day. But like this was the beginning of the hashtag Black Lives Matter, when there was just like such a public amount of executions of unarmed black people by police officers. And so I think that it was extremely dichotomized, and it was almost oxymoronic to be like, I love my black skin, when that was the thing that's held against me the most in the society. So I wanted to write a song about that too, and talk about how I'm proud of it no matter what. But you know, here you go. This is the song. I hope y'all like it.
Lizzo, thank you so much for talking with us, and thank you for your music.
Thank you.
Lizzo's new album is called 'Cause I Love You. Our interview was recorded in May.
What's deeper than the darkest best? Kept secret beneath the surface, we kid. Let it bring us together, or it could tear us apart. Oh, I'm filled with it. I got a love with no conditions, though it's hard to re-envision time and time again. Even when it didn't matter anymore, the most beautiful thing that you ever seen is even bigger than what we think it means. Reflections in our bloodstreams, it's even bigger than I woke up in this. I woke up in this, in my skin. I can't wash it away, so you can't take it from me. Girl meets world, a crazy position. Now your dreams is your mission, huh? Staring in the mirror, realizing wishing work. Now all I wish is for a chance to get my kids aboard. I got a family tree that's worth praising the Lord. Mama looking like the second, woo, look at God. Sister like a soldier, hold it down. Southwest gon' hold it down. I love you, don't forget it. Your beautiful black masterpiece, boy. They don't make brothers like you. Make it happen with that black girl magic, the hat trick off of what we must do.
If you'd like to catch up on Fresh Air interviews you missed, like our interviews with journalist Adam Higginbotham about the untold story of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, or with actress Sarah Jessica Parker, who stars in the HBO series Divorce, which began its third season this week, check out our podcast. You'll find lots of Fresh Air interviews. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, Mooj Zaidi, Thea Challoner, and Seth Kelly. I'm Terry Gross. I see someone like me ashamed to be, and honestly, I'm really, really, I'm fed up with it. Trying to send it up like a FedEx. I'm wondering what they say next.